Innocence of Muslims, the YouTube video that sparked violent protests in the Muslim world last September, is in the news again. After the deadly attack on the UN mission in Benghazi, UN Ambassador Susan Rice suggested on TV that the inflammatory film had caused the attack. It appears now that deliberate terrorism, not the spontaneous outrage the video spawned elsewhere, was behind the Benghazi violence. And on Thursday, under pressure from Senate Republicans, Rice removed herself from consideration for Secretary of State. Around the same time as the attack in Benghazi, an airing of a very different film about the Islamic faith caused a small riot in northern India. The Message is a multi-million-dollar epic about the life of Muhammad, which debuted in the U.S. in 1977. The film could not be more different than Innocence of Muslims, yet it's the second time it's been connected to violence. The Message played a part in a bizarre, little-remembered terrorism incident on U.S. soil that now stands as an eerie foreshadowing for the riots that erupted 35 years later. The movie's producer, Syrian-American Mustafa Akkad, himself a Muslim, envisioned the film as a sweeping epic. Western viewers were not impressed.
Because they thought it was too dumbed down. They thought it was too sympathetic. The musical score, which was actually nominated for an Academy Award, was overly sympathetic towards Muhammad and his story.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, from Muhammad, the messenger of God, greetings to him.
It was a pretty basic plot, pretty poorly acted. It's nothing compared to Lawrence of Arabia or similar epics from that era.
Maybe not Lawrence of Arabia, but quite the epic. The producer spent a lot of money, $17 million, 1977 dollars, to faithfully depict the roots of Islam.
He wanted to spread the story of Muhammad to a Western audience. And respecting Islamic tradition, he chose not to portray Muhammad in voice or an image throughout the film.
Muhammad is generous, yes. He gives, he shares. But he is spreading dangerous ideas.
Dangerous ideas? That no man should starve? That the rich should not defraud the poor? That the strong should not oppress the weak? Are these dangerous ideas?
And yet for all his good intentions, this film became a bargaining chip in this terrorist incident in Washington, D.C. in 77 when a group of Hanafi Muslims, that's American-born converts to Islam, seized three buildings in D.C., killed two people, and took almost 150 others hostage. Tell me about these Hanafis.
We should start with their leader, and his name was Hamad Abdul Khalis, and the early 60s, he joined the Nation of Islam and actually rose through the ranks. He befriended Malcolm X. In the mid-60s, he broke with the Nation of Islam and formed the Hanafi Muslim Movement of America. They were based in Washington, D.C. In 1973, a hate crime is committed against Khalis, and several members of his family are murdered. And then 4 years later is when he storms and takes over three buildings in Washington. Sharpshooters surrounded the buildings that the Hanafis took over. President Carter was briefed on the situation. Even the State Department brought in ambassadors from Muslim countries to try to pacify the Hanafis. For 40 hours, the city was stopped.
One of the most remarkable aspects of this episode, the takeover of the B'nai B'rith and the Islamic Center and the district building, is that the whole thing played out on the local news, Channel 9, in real time, and its anchor man, Max Robinson, was very much in the middle of this story.
The terrorists established a telephone dialogue with Robinson, who was the first to broadcast their demands. Among other things, that a new movie about the Prophet Muhammad be banned.
But once the film is removed from this country, once you are asking that those responsible for the deaths or who killed your children be brought to the B'nai B'rith building.
They did not get the murderers to the district building. However, the Message was stopped from premiering in New York on that same day.
And various governmental officials, including the ambassador to the United Nations, Andrew Young, and I think President Carter himself, publicly fretted over a press being so free that it gave so much oxygen to a terrorist incident.
in a strange way, shades of President Obama and Susan Rice this year. You have President Carter had to defend his UN ambassador's comments, who said that he wanted a law to restrict the flow of information, and he wanted the press not to be able to give a platform to these attackers.
Do you have any idea what it was in the message that infuriated the Hanafis? In particular, do you have any idea whether Khalees had actually even seen the film?
He was quoted as saying that he saw the message as the inspiration for him to act. Similar to the rhetoric concerning innocence of Muslims, he just called the film denigrating towards Islam and Muhammad. By all accounts, he probably did not see the film, considering it was on the day of its premiere.
Do you think the people who rioted in Kashmir and elsewhere in northern India had any idea that the message was not the innocence of Muslims?
I'm sure they had no idea, and almost 5 minutes into the film, or not even 5 minutes into the film, there's a slide that's shown that says, the image of Muhammad will not be shown in this movie. And so presumably this riot that occurred in India happened even before that five-minute mark in the film.
Akkad lost a fortune with the original production of the message, but he went on to do pretty well in Hollywood. He was the producer of what?
The Halloween movies starring Jamie Lee Curtis. And it's just, it's really, I think, symbolic in this whole story of mistaken intentions. Akkad tried so hard to make this large, high-budget epic, and it largely flopped and inspired violence. And then his next movie was this low-budget slasher movie, and it wound up grossing tens of millions of dollars and launching a franchise.
Malcolm, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to share this history.
Malcolm Burnley wrote about the message on Atlantic.com. That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, Sara Abdurkhman, Chris Neary, and Doug Anderson, with more help from Krista Ripple and Annie Russell. And the show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Ken Feldman.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find transcripts and read our fabulous blog at onthemedia.org. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And you can email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.